one dropped. Yeah, we don't have a political entity. We don't have this infrastructure. But if such infrastructure is missing, so then how do we even make political demands? So nobody will listen. And I think that to build such infrastructure, we have to come down back to the earth, and we have to assess our situation. We have to go away from these unachievable goals, like we have to dismantle Putin's regime, we have to establish a new radical project here and now. I don't want to say that it's completely unimpossible, but it's unimpossible within this current context of our weakness here and now. And this situation we have to assess and consider. So, what is this situation in a more concrete way? Well, there is a lot of us are have the social status of a migrant, and let's get the record straight. What is the social status of a migrant? And I think if we go to the roots of this, it is a mechanism to divide and control the working class. And this may sound a little bit far-fetched, but we have to look just to the big politicians, the mainstream politicians, and what do they say when they are talking about migration issues? Often you will hear the phrase control of migration flows. So there is some, they are speaking about control. And they don't want to stop the flow because everyone knows that Germany has the lack of skilled labor. But they also don't care about the lives of the people who are on the way to save them. They are thinking about the necessities of the capitalist to have more skilled labor, but they but don't to pay for the skilled labor and for the integration of this labor. So this is the easy idea behind that. And now, when coming to a new country, these families, the people leave their families behind, and they start to build their new life from scratch. And then, but beyond these personal problems, there is another subset of problems produced by the system of control, and we have started to fight it some in a way. So, and one of the most stressful status, for example, is the temporary character of this residential status. And because it's conditional and it's tied to some condition, and these conditions all ch may change also quickly. And one of this often this condition is employment. And if you don't find employment, you may be kicked out of the country. And from the working class perspective, it creates a vulnerable bargaining position because the migrant is desperate to find any job at any condition. Housing is another problem because often landlords don't want to accept migrants, and it's worse for you if you don't have a decent job and you can't show them that you have a stable income. So, and then these main problems, they break down to a subset like psychological issues, loss of identity, language barriers, issues with recognition of qualification, other types of discrimination. And then on top of that, there are some, stupid politicians in the talk shows talking that you're worthless and creating some stereotypes, and that also creates this stress. Probably these are the problems that should make the center of our attention in order to build this infrastructure, and not these political demands that in the current situation we are unable to challenge, you know. And at the same time, there are already organizations.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And
what is your then specificity? Because there are a lot of different organizations, like from church, from state, who kind of help people to find their way in this German society. And why we need one organization more?
Yeah. So, yeah, we have these other organizations. And, of course, if they are doing a good job, we probably need to cooperate and we also have to learn from them. But there is one certain aspect I'm missing in all this, and it's the political one. Because they are constructed around some idea of NGOs, and often this idea contains that we don't mess with politics, although they do. You know, the experience tell us that often these NGOs are backed by some different kind of movements or parties, and then the politics come in from the back door. So probably we should embrace this idea as well. And when new migrants are coming, they should be socialized in the radical left, and we should not try to give them away to the other movements, and we should not give them away to the ultra-righters. Like, for example, the AfD had the Alternative für Deutschland had they did it well by integrating some Russians, Aussiedlers, in the sense to make them to obtain the status of a German. And that's where they gained a lot of support by the Russian diaspora. Because there is a vacuum when migrants are coming. And this is what, for example, labor unions failed to do. The migrants are underrepresented in labor unions. And if you go, for example, just as an example, the meat industry in Germany, yeah? When there were some interviews in a certain study I have read these days, so when they spoke to some representatives of labor unions, they were mostly Germans. Although this industry have 90% of the workers are from other countries. So these labor organizations fail in a certain way to work with migrants. But now we shouldn't complain now and about that they don't do their job, but rather there should be an organization which has some expertise and which can say that if they are doing wrong, what they are doing wrong, and to start creating this kind of knowledge. But with an activist background, because there are a lot of studies, but I think we should create something like an organization that concentrates on migrational issues, but also politicize this problem, so make political demands and create like a nexus between other migrant organizations with a system of a rotating door. So activists of, I don't know, some radical left organizations who want to engage more in migrant issues may come to us. We may do something together, yeah? So, and maybe we can work out also, fix some problems, we can help migrants, but then we can formulate together some political demands, which they, in turn, through their organizations can push and creates a force, a political force that will also have some impact on the politics in the German parliament and so on, to create our own migrant lobby, actually, and in the sense of the radical left. You know?
Okay, you all have big ambitions, I see, and you want to kind of bring Russian-speaking, or not even just Russian-speaking migrants from the hands of AfD to the on the left side of politics. What exactly you're going to do in this case?
I think if we are talking about first steps, we need to create an extensive network and a knowledge base. So we have to start gathering literature about today, about the state of migration, but today, maybe, of course, some history of the last, I don't know, 20 or 50 years, because to understand some issues, we have to understand the history of the issue. But it hasn't to be only theoretically, because we had a nice experience in another project where we started by reading a book about certain issues, but then after you end reading and you like what the author writes, you connect to these people who maybe also have some experience in this practical experience in this field, and then you start talking with them and trying to find things out how you can take more concrete steps, because they have their ideas, you have the ideas, and then you by that you start doing some actions and actually already helping migrants. I don't know, it has to be very it has to be a concrete issue. I don't know, for example, it could be an issue in housing where a migrant lost his there actually was we had an issue where a migrant had to move out because inside of his flat there he lived with people who were who had tuberculosis, and he was also in a very vulnerable position in the sense of his medical state. So he had to move out, but then the government told him, or the institutions where he had to ask for a new the housing, told him, well, you have to look it up by yourself. So we cannot guarantee you having a ceiling around you above your head. And you have to figure it out by your own. But he didn't even speak German, you know. So these are the situations where we have to find out, maybe first by helping them, but then maybe by creating some mechanisms, streamlining the process of helping these people that face a similar situation. And also in the political context, of course, but because there are more, there are a lot of issues about the residential status and so on, or labor conflicts. You know, often in the area of where migrants are working, let's say there is, I don't know, a pallet hanging around that will fall on your head and someday, and the management doesn't care about this, and if then it falls down on someone's hands, someone's head. What actually happens? I am just giving you a real example, and these migrants also, because of you know, you have a language barrier. They don't know how to talk about that. But if there is an organization that says, okay, we are defending labor rights, and not a network, then they will come to us and they will speak about it, and then we will find out how to fix such things.
Okay, so you're right now on the theoretical kind of level and going to come to practical, or you already have some cases in your kind of procedure, and maybe what kind of tools you have, and have you actually an experience to work in this kind of social sphere to help people?
So if you're talking about me personally, I have no experience in working in the migrant field. But I'm myself a migrant of the second generation. I grew in this kind of society. My parents came in the 90s. They were living in a tent on the Elbe some months, so this is not complete unknown to me. And there are a lot of problems I have seen all my life within the migrant community, as well as the kind of segregation. So, for example, when I went to school, there was some in a very bürgerliche type of school. There was a lot of misunderstanding, and so I think I understand somehow these problems. Now, to the point of the practical experience and the theoretical. So yeah, I think that there is a lack of connection between the theory and the practical things. So and between the politics and this practical stuff that, for example, NGOs do. And I think that we should create a bridge in this gap.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the migrant collective, let's not speak only about me, there are, of course, activists who have some real experience in this type of actions.
So, sometimes at the Russian community, the people talk what kind of resources you have. Could you help if people have some housing problem to some consultation, or if the people have a problem with their jobs, could you connect them with some organization who can solve these problems?
Yeah, you know, that's the issue, and that's why we are talking about. I think what is missing is this big network of people and as well professionals, which we are currently trying to establish. The few cases we had, I can't say that we were completely successful in this. And but also there wasn't a lot, because we are still a quite small organization. So the idea is like to create a real network. And I want to emphasize that we should not create some kind of service, but rather a self-organizing initiative. So when someone writes into this group of people, then we should figure out now, okay, who can participate, who knows this area well, and then try to manage to figure it out. And of course, we are doing currently the task is to establish these connections. What we are doing, like for example, I have been now in Berlin, and there were also some people who thought exactly the same, or who thought about the same. And when I started to talking about, well, we have this initiative, Migrant Collective, they told, that is what we need, that is what is missing. So there is some, everyone talks about, but nobody does. So, okay, we are at the point where we started to do it. And I think the first step to do is create this network, because we cannot start doing when we are, let's say we are, I don't know, 5 to 8 people currently. I don't have the exact number, but if you start doing or putting all your efforts right now in this situation on one thing, you will probably burn out, because it's impossible to manage to tackle these problems in such a small group, and we are not financed by anyone. We have this idea to create some financing through organizing a Verein, with some monthly payments. But currently, I think the most important part is creating a bigger network. I think we should go, you know, to 20, 30 people who are willing to work, and then we will figure out like on the issues that we, what are the issues that we should first concentrate on? Because that's what happened. We started to do things, and then there was like this lack of initiative, because you were doing like 1 month everything, and then you have this burnout, and then everyone stops working.
Okay, so this kind of, I don't know, the English word self-care, Selbsthilfe, But you have now this, your small organization. Are you going to connect other organizations? For example, I saw this last year's a huge solidarity connection, work connections and so on with the Ukrainian refugees. For example, here exists this Nordherz and some other Ukrainian organizations who help the people who came from Ukraine. I see that it's always big groups, a huge process of involving people to this care about refugees. And do we want to learn from the others? Do we want to connect some other groups and to say them, we're here, we want to learn from your experience, or you want to, first of all, to create your own kind of way to have a solidarity, to have your own cries of people, maybe.
Yes, of course, we want to connect to other organizations, and that what we are trying to do. We had some talks with the DDEF. It's a Turkish worker organization. And I am looking forward to also to speak out with some anarcho-syndicalists union the next week. So regarding organizations like Nordherz, I have some doubts, because they position themselves as completely apolitical. And if we are talking about this is what we don't want to do, we want to politicize this. By helping the migrant, we should also politicize them, because politicization is also an act of emancipation in a new society, because you start thinking about your political rights in this new country, and that you get this understanding that you should talk about it, because, you know, Germany gives you asylum. It doesn't mean that you have to shut up and agree with everything what the German government does. So I think we should concentrate really on the radical left, And I have also, for this network, I have tried to formulate some principles that I would like to read out here. And so if we do some collaborations, if we create a set network, we have to agree on this principle. And for example, I don't know, if Nordherz agree, then let's work together. But that would be against the capital and the state for a classless and authoritarian society. And the second will be against social partnership and class collaboration and for an independent internationalist labor movement. So I think these are the boundaries that should be, because if we are talking to build our own infrastructure, we should have some boundaries. But at the same time, I think these boundaries still are quite broad enough to unite radical left projects in Germany with the migrants and to get of it some results.
Okay, radical left. I see. Okay. I don't know. Do you want to tell some more information, how people can join you, how they can come to talk with you, ask questions?
Yeah, currently we have a website. It is migrant-collective.org, and there is a form where you can write us. If you write us, we will see your message and then we will answer.
Vuile hoerenloper.
O mellifluous dwarf, prince of all the jesters, funny little thing you are, make me laugh as God's voluminous star.
Gracious Majesty, today is not made for laughter day. This moment sacred is more for royal sunsets than comic ruin or suicidal
jests. I'll be the judge of that, thank you. Make me laugh, le petit coeur. Drink some wine, lest you foul sweet time.
Drink upsets me. Please, your liege. This would mark the death of...
I said drink, you scabrous whore. Are you deaf as well as short?
Kingdom, sire. Big as you are, save such bile for larger foes.
Make me laugh, for I stretch your neck like a giraffe.
Yes. Oscar, Oscar Jan Hoogland at hotmail.com of info@doek.org. Dat werkt alle twee.
Dankjewel.
Welcome, you are listening to Lake Daily from Roskilde Festival, where we are on our final and big music day at the festival. Wherever you are, I would like you to take a moment, lean back, stretch, relax your gaze and breathe out. My name is Torbjørn S. Andersen and I'm sitting here with my co-host Louise.
Yeah, hi, my name is Louise Espensen and a very warm welcome to everybody who's listening out there.
Yeah, and today we have our fourth live broadcast from the festival. We have guests in the studio, we have music interviews, we have mentions and a selected few recommendations of music that we at the Lake would like to experience here on the final day of the festival. We are all both really tired and we are also very excited at the same time. We've experienced a huge range of culture and music. We have experiences of performances, art, everything from drone rock to dance to choir, vocal ensemble. It's a huge mix here at the festival, and today we are celebrating the diversity and the community around Roskilde Festival.
Yeah, so Torbjørn, if I was not making radio right now, I would be at the Gloria stage, because then I would be able to see the Georgian vocal group called Pankisi Ensemble. And they have this special, they're keeping this music tradition of kits, an ethnic minority in Georgia, alive. So to all of us who are missing out on their concert, let's listen to them. Listen to them now. Here is Pankisi Ensemble with the track Aseti Game.
Aseti Game Mokholodme Tebeshiya Guli Temine Dada Ve Garabi Tzilev Ve
Just heard a vocal piece here by Pankisi Ensemble, and now I've got our first two guests in the studio, and they're from the Roskilde Festival organization. And welcome to Niklas Damkjær and Christine Tetzlaff. And
hi,
here's Niklas coming in. Hi, Niklas.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks so much for coming today. So I'm just going to introduce a little bit of a frame around it. From our point of view, Roskilde Festival has always been built by a lot of volunteers and a lot of volunteer power, and there's a lot of community around it as well. But especially this about the volunteers, today there's a new extension to the way that Roskilde Festival books and scouts for the festival. And they have changed how the festival is set up. It's called First Days and Final Days. And you have invited in some volunteer scouts.
Yes. There's always been a lot of volunteers in Roskilde Festival, and as you say, and also in the music group and in the team music. Now we have expanded that quite a lot. Just 1 year ago, we were 5 programmers and bookers. 3 of us hired full year and 2 volunteers. And now we are 11 in the team, meaning we got one stopped, a few got in, so we got 7 new people who began this January, this year. And the idea behind it came from, I guess, 2 aspects. One being that as the music industry also becomes more and more professionalized, it's more and more needed that we have a few, which is me and Thomas, who's just over there, who's head of music, and a third person, and we are becoming more and more the paper pushers, so to say. So we are making the deal, doing the contracting, the negotiations, the contacts with the production, and it just takes a lot of our time, and it takes a lot of time away from what's very important for a festival like Roskilde that wants to have a very broad music profile, and that is to have a lot of music scouted or listened to. And it has become, we realized that it was becoming more and more difficult for us. So that's the one thing. And we also just wanted to have a broader group to have a view at the program and to help programming to also meet that we have a very broad audience, of course.
And I can see in the program that you have selected it through a little bit of a process where you used also anonymous applications. Is that correct?
For the scouts, yes. We then did this application and made it broader. And I'm not even sure how you saw it, Christiane. That would also be nice to know. Actually, I don't think we talked about that. But we got a lot of applications, of course, around 200. And we got a lot of very, very, very good applications, which is, of course, very nice. And it was anonymous, so we didn't know age or gender or name. And we had four quite like simple questions, and I believe we expected like quite short answers. So it was like, what kind of music do you like? What kind of music do you want to see at the festival? And like, and I believe, what kind of communities have you been a part of?
So can I ask you for your personal experience? Now you've seen it, you're in the middle of the festival. The festival is rolling, there's a flow. You've seen the first days where I think a lot of the programming also came from the...
Yeah, because the thing is, like, we got the scouts in to scout for the... mainly for the final days, but we... that's how it is with such processes. We ended it a bit late, so we got the scout started in January, and we were nearly done with the final days program there. So what was left was the first day's program, and we hadn't even started that yet. And then we actually decided that together with the scouts that came in there, we asked them if they wanted to, but instead of just scouting, also actually doing the programming of the first day's program. And I think that kind of came like a surprise. We didn't expect that, but it just came naturally, and I think it was a very good decision. And it's been very, very fun to try to work in another way where it's a bit bigger democracy, we have more people doing it, but I think the result has been extremely good looking at the program.
Christiane, maybe it's time to hear some words from you.
Sure.
So I'd like to first start off, could you tell me, what do you do as a music scout?
So we have a couple of different things we do. We have this concert calendar where we can suggest shows that we want to scout. And then the bookers will update it, tell us if they think it's relevant or not. And if they do, we'll go to the concert and then we'll write a report back. Not like... when you say report, it sounds like many pages. It's just like a quick, notes on how it is and whether we can like recommend it for Roskilde next year or not. So that's one thing. And like Niklas said, I think the idea was that was mainly for the final days. Then we this year also help with the programming of the first day's lineup, where we had these like sort of monthly meetings where we, every time we brought in like 10 suggestions, and then we were supposed to listen to them beforehand, like everyone's suggestions, and then we sort of just had like a like organic discussion about it. Some of the first names came quite like easily, and then later on we started looking at like, okay, what do we have now and what are we missing? And yeah, so those are like the two main things I feel like we've been doing this half year.
I love that you have allowed it to grow and change. That often when you visit a festival, everything seems very square and you think, oh, the organization, the timing and so on, but I love that you have given space to make things happen a little bit. I was going to ask you if you had a specific focus that you were interested in or focused when you were working to this year.
So we actually had some genres split between us. I think that's also one of the things that's sort of like changed a bit, because we found it quite difficult to... It's just difficult to work with genres because everything is just...
changing all the time, and you know, what is electronic, what is hip-hop, I don't know, like everything's just, it can be...
It's very hybrid.
Exactly, yeah. It's super hybrid, and yeah, so I think we do have some different like focuses, but still just, yeah, it's pretty dynamic how it works, and I think everyone's been sort of responsible for everything, but I think, you know, if I should say something, probably not. I don't know too much about like metal and heavy and stuff like that, but I feel like I've been scouting almost everything else. Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of diversity, is something we've been a little bit interested in here at the radio. We're also a community radio, and we try to represent a lot of people and a lot of different concerts. We love generally. Now on day 4 of the festival, of course, we've experienced that great program that you've made, and we've seen a lot of diversity, but would you like to talk a little bit about it, what you've done and how you look around and how you select?
Yeah, should I talk about it for the first day's program? Yeah. Well, I would love to say that it's a super, organized process where we count everything, and but I think it is... actually just more dynamic, that you know there were just some very obvious artists to look at this year, and then
all aspects, which I think you as an audience also experienced. I think that like the sound on the stage is just
really festival.
Hi to all the Lake Radio listeners. This is Anya/Excelsior. I played at the Gaia stage, and I want to say thanks to everyone who showed up. It was a really big experience for me, and I'm looking really much forward to see how she will transform this blend of styles into a live set. Yeah, that's it. Bye.